Because this morning I basically want to tell two stories, two love stories, which is kind of corny, but bear with me. At the turn of the year, it's often a time when we make resolutions, right? And I'm not going to ask what your resolutions are, how many resolutions you made and all that stuff, because really resolutions, I think, are overrated. But if you know what, if it's important for you, God bless you. But I think another thing that's important, especially for Christians at the turn of the year, is to consider the year that we've had. To reflect back on the good times and the bad times, on where God's led us, and on where God has, where maybe we've strayed away from God's leading and gone our own way, and how He's pulled us back. And I've been thinking, I was thinking a lot this past week, and it actually changed the way I was going to share this morning. So this morning, my text is one sentence long. It's from John 21:15. And this is after Jesus died. He rose from the dead. The disciples had never experienced, well, you know what, no one in human history has ever experienced anything like that dramatic before. The Messiah, the Son of God, coming back from the dead. And so Simon and some of his brothers were fishing, and Jesus shows up. And Simon had gone back to his nets, and he must have thought that his career was done. So much for this Messiah thing, he was dead. And Jesus showed up alive after he was killed. And what does he ask Simon? Renamed Peter, do you love me? Simon, do you love me? He asks him three times. Simon, do you love me? Simon, do you love me? Simon, do you love me more than these? And so I want to tell two love stories this morning that are going to be pretty corny. And the first one is about Donna and I, because I don't know if I've ever told you about our story, about where we've come from. So you're going to hear it. And Donna is at home, so I don't have a conscience here to keep me on the straight and narrow when it comes to telling. But I told her I'd be sharing this, so it's all good. You've heard the jokes about going to bridal college to get your MRS degree, right?
Yeah.
Ba-dum, psh. It's a joke, but it's true. You know what? You take people that are just out of high school, you take them away from their parents and throw them in a school together where they spend all their time together, and everyone has one thing in common, for the most part, is that you love God and you want to follow God. It just happens. People get married. And I was no different. I met Donna in Bible college. We were talking about this past week, and we actually met at Kelsey's one night. She was at another table. I didn't even realize she was a student at the school at the time. But it was the next day that I really noticed her for the first time. You know, if you know what I mean. Like, really, like, oh, that's, wow. That's interesting. I had no car back then, and it was my mom's birthday coming up, or maybe it was Mother's Day. I can't remember, one of those things. And I needed to get mom something, and I always have had a hard time buying for my mom. So I was downtown Peterborough, walking around from store to store, wrestling, trying to figure out what to get her. And I don't think I had anything in my hand. It was kind of a bummer of a trip. Everything I saw, I thought, ah, oh, she's not going to like that. And I was walking home, and I remember it was hot. And it's funny. Can you remember where you were when the Twin Towers were hit? Yeah, if you have a bit more experience in this world, you can probably remember where you were when JFK died, which incidentally was the same time that C.S. Lewis died, which was a more important event in my books. But anyways, it's funny when those critical points in our life, we can remember them. And I remember I was wearing sandals, and I don't like wearing sandals. It was irritating, but it was dusty and it was hot and the sand was getting in my sandals. But anyways, I was walking back and there was this crowd of people that were at the other table at Kelsey's last night. And there is some people that I had known from school, and then there is Donna. And I'm like, oh, one problem. I had a girlfriend. She was in Japan at the time. And I'm not making that up. I was actually dating a girl who went to teach English as a second language in Japan. So it wasn't like we fell head over heels in love at first sight, but we just got to know each other and we got to spend more time with each other. And just before Christmas, my girlfriend came home from Japan and we both realized that we were done. And so we broke up, as usually happens in these young relationships. And I started thinking about Donna in a whole new light. I'm thinking, this is some special girl, right? So, okay, I'm going to be really honest with you. My kind of pattern with dating was horrible in youth group. And so don't take this as a pattern for you. But I'd usually wind up meeting someone, and we kind of sneak away somewhere and start smooching. And then it'd be like, oh, okay, I guess we're dating. And that Donna was different. She didn't kiss me like I expected every relationship to happen. In fact, she wouldn't even hold my hand for a while. Is something wrong? Am I reading the wrong signals? And I just never experienced a girl like this. And so we started hanging out more in January, spending a lot of time together. And I'm like, okay, maybe this is what it's like to just be good friends. I can live with this. I can do this. I can be a gentleman, I guess, if I have to. And so it was this one January morning. And this is another one of those moments that's imprinted on my mind, because I even wrote a song about this moment, and I recorded it on a cassette deck, and I played it at my wedding reception. That's how corny I was. She wondered if we wanted to go for a walk. I'm like, yeah, okay, we can go for a walk. That'd be cool. And so we start walking, and we're walking away from the school up this hill, and the street lights were shining. They were yellow. You know how it makes everything yellow in the winter? All the snow looks yellow. I remember that vividly. And we're walking, and I'm doing the casual thing like this, right? And you're swinging your hand. You're being all sly. And Donna was swinging her hand on the other side, and she had a mitten, and I had a glove, and all of a sudden it was like, and our hands connected. And I tell you, it was like electric shock. I've been reading, I just finished reading over the holidays, Calvin Miller. He's a Christian author, and this is his memoir called Life is Mostly Edges. I bought it because of the cover, I'm not going to lie. Brilliant cover. But he made a comment that you got to beware of the handholders. Yeah, kissing's one thing. Big spark, a lot of flame, and it burns out. But when you hold hands, you know you're going in the same direction, you're looking the same way. And that moment, it was like, pew! You know the butterflies you get in your stomach before you do something that you're really scared of? It was like the butterflies were on crack. That's the best way I know to understand. And so I tried to be casual, and I'm sweating under my toque. And we walked for about half an hour, 45 minutes, at which point I'm like, oh, yeah, I got this. And Donna stopped, and she looked at me. Are we going to talk about this or what? I'm like, oh, okay. And we were really awkward in Bible college-y, and we're looking at each other, and we're like, I really like you. And she's like, I like you too. And so I told you it was going to be corny, but so we walked back to school, and that was one of those moments that's just imprinted here. And from that moment on, I'm not going to share every little detail because it's gross and cheesy, but I wanted to be with her all the time. All the time. You know how much I hate the phone. I don't own a cell phone. I'd rather talk to any one of you face-to-face than over the phone, because it's just so much better, right? And I've always been like that. I've never really enjoyed talking on the phone, but I spent hours on the phone. In my dorm room, because we had a curfew back then in Bible college, so when the curfew came, we would go our separate ways. She'd be on that side of the school. I'd be on this side of the school. And I had a phone in my dorm room. She had a phone in her dorm room that she shared with her roommate. And we'd just be on the phone, and we could talk for hours, and that's so not me. And it wasn't even so much that I wanted to talk to her or learn things about her, although that was there. It was, I just wanted to be with her, and that was the closest I could get to being with her. So we were on the phone all the time. She had a roommate who had a boyfriend named Bruce, who committed the cardinal sin. He was going through the same things with his girlfriend that I was going through with Donna at the same time. And he was on the phone with her. And they were doing one of those hour after hour call conversations where they're just talking. And she kept talking and talking. And I got this from Donna's perspective, right, because it's her roommate. And she's like, she was talking and talking and talking. And then all of a sudden she asked a question and got quiet. And then she said, Bruce, are you awake? And yeah, he fell asleep on the other end of the phone. And so she threatened me that never to do that to her. And I didn't. But and maybe because she's not here, I'm feeling a little bold, but there was one time in our relationship when we were talking on the phone, I forget what, I said something stupid. It was kind of half joking, but she went, and hung up on me. I've never been hung up before in my life, and she hung up on me. And I'm sitting in my dorm room, the door was open, I'm like, dude, she hung up on me. And little did I know, Paul Stacey, a guy we called Stick, was walking by the door, and he heard me say, she hung up on me. And so from that point on, throughout the rest of Bible college career, every time Paul Stacey walked by Donna, he'd say, "Hey, Donna," click, and walk away. anyways, again, corny Bible college stuff. We always wanted to be together. There were important steps in our relationship. There was one day, it was the end of June, I worked a night shift at the, I worked night shift at a grocery store. So I worked all through the night, woke up in the morning, and drove all the way to Uxbridge from Bancroft, which is about 2 hours away, to see her, picked her up, drove all the way to Canada's Wonderland, spent the day at Canada's Wonderland together on Canada Day, hanging out. We had a great time. But by the time night rolled around, I was groggy, right? Because I'd been up the whole night before and then spent the whole day at Wonderland and driven all that time. And so I was half out of it that night. And we were back at Donna's parents' place. And you get that moment where you know you should say something. And you're scared because you're afraid that the person's not going to say it back to you. And sure enough, I got up the courage on that Canada Day to say, "Donna, I love you." And then she didn't delay at all, but in my mind, it was like forever. Because you're like, the last thing you want to hear when you say to someone, "I love you," is, "Aw, you're swell." Or, "I love you. Oh, that's great." But no, she said, "I love you" back. And we knew almost from right then that we were going to be married. We got engaged in January of 1997. I did another corny thing. You're corny when you're in love. I went home on the Christmas holidays and I made a book, a wooden book with wooden covers and a wooden spine. And I drilled it through the pages and I wove it together with leather, and I wrote a story which was like an allegory of our relationship, and I put it in there, and on the back page I had a ring like hooked in with a little piece of paper, a little tab of paper, and so we were kind of talking about getting engaged and everything, and basically the idea was it's got to happen before February. So I wasn't going to do it January 31st, right, because she'd see it coming. So January the 30th, the day, and then she didn't see it coming. I went downtown and I went shopping and I picked up the Beatles songbook. I still remember that. The day I bought her engagement ring, I bought Moist's album called Creature. It's amazing how that sticks. But I came back to her room. I'm like, "Hey, you got to see these books that I got downtown." I'm like, "The Beatles songbook, it's pretty swell, eh?" I'm like, "Check out this one. It's weird, eh? It's all wooden and different." And so I read the story. I got down on my knee and I gave her the ring, and it was a beautiful, touching, happy moment. That was in that was January the 30th, and we were married that September. And beautiful little service in Uxbridge. We were as frugal then as we are now, or, well, more her than me because I'm good at spending money. But we had a wedding that we had a lunch reception. So we were on the road by 5 o'clock in the afternoon. All the celebrations were done and we were on our way. We went to, you're going to groan, Niagara Falls. Because why not, right? On our way to Florida, which is a big shocker for a honeymoon, we went to Niagara Falls. And I remember one thing that I wanted to share about this. As we were driving away from Uxbridge, we're driving away in a van that friends just lent us that day because it had air conditioning for our trip. We're driving away in this van, and all of a sudden it hit me. I don't have to take her home. Yeah. And that was the biggest thing that I'm like, I don't have to take this girl home. We don't have one of our homes to go to anymore. And it was, this is awesome. I'll stop telling the corny stuff now. We've had struggles in our marriage. Nothing too critical. We're both pretty calm and laid back, and what you see is what you get. So we've never had any barn-burning fights, but we've had difficulties. We've had money problems that most couples wrestle with. I worked full-time at a church in Mississauga on a half-time salary and cleaned photocopiers at night, and she commuted across the city to work in an office for a trucking company. And we were run off our feet and never had enough money. There were times where when we tried to have children, I don't know how many of you know this, but we had a hard time having children at the beginning. It took a few years, and it was like, "Lord, what are you doing?" And it was one of those soul-searching times for you as a couple. But every time we went through one of those times, we seemed to grow a little closer together. Even coming here, 3 years ago, my job, my role as an assistant music pastor was pretty much up in Petrolia. And I had a good severance package and I was fine, but we were out there trusting the Lord thinking, what do you have for us? Where are we going to go next? And God worked it all together. But it's those moments of not strife, but difficulty as a couple that bring you together. And I just love her. I love her like crazy. And she's going to have to listen to this on the internet if she wants to hear that. No, I'm joking. I'll tell her. We're in our 15th year together as a married couple now, and it's better than ever. That was the first love story. And the reason I told you that was because the most common metaphor in the entire Bible to describe the relationship between God and his people is that of a husband and wife. Hands down. By a wide margin. If you read the prophets, especially in the Old Testament, you'll see this all the time. The relationship God has with his people is described of as a relationship between a husband and wife, because that's pretty much the closest way human beings have to conceive of such a relationship with God. And so the second love story that I want to tell you about is my love story with God. How I met God, because that's another thing. I've been here 3 years, and I don't think I've ever really shared my testimony. My grandma passed away a couple years ago, and they were cleaning her house out because they're selling the house this year, and I got some of her old books. She was raised, her parents, in the Holiness Church. No instruments at all, strict, kind of an offshoot of Methodism, and there's a bunch of different books and hymn books that I've got, but this one book I got over the Christmas holidays of, it was her grandma's book, and it's called The Life of Claude A. Gunder, and the subtitle is my favorite part, Saved by the Blood from a Drunkard's Hell. That's a testimony. The Life of Claude A. Gunder, Saved by the Blood from a Drunkard's Hell. I haven't read it yet, but I'm looking forward to reading it. There is a list of people who will authenticate his testimony. Apparently, it's so unbelievable, you'd have to go to these people to say, is this really true? And yes, it is. So The Life Saved by the Blood from a Drunkard's Hell. I've always thought it'd be cool to have one of those testimonies where I was on the brink of despair, but there's only so much trouble you can get into when you're 4 years old. And that's when I think I first met God. I was raised in a Christian home. I was raised in a Pentecostal church in Bancroft. I was, the week after I was born, I was underneath the pew picking at the gum. No, there's no gum. But picking at the bottom of the pew. I don't remember it, but I was told this. Gnawing on the front of the pew here. I was raised there. And I became a Christian on the sidewalk. I don't remember when it was, and you know what, I say four, I know I was young, I might be off in my dates even, because who can really remember that firmly back then? I can't. But I was walking on the sidewalk, and I found out later that the same thing happened with Donna. Donna's a sidewalk Christian as well. We both met God on the sidewalk when we were walking. I was walking down the sidewalk, and it was just like what my Sunday school teachers had told me, just all kind of went chink. And locked together, like Lego blocks kind of clicking together, I thought, yeah, I need God. And I prayed. I remember praying on the sidewalk as a little tiny kid, saying, God, would you come into my heart? And he did. I have no doubt of it. My relationship with Donna has been pretty even keeled and steady going. It's the same with my relationship with God. I mean, I became a teenager, and usually when you become a teenager, you become reckless and crazy, and you live a wild life, and then you repent, and then you come back to God, and then all's well in the end. But I never really had that. I was always the good boy, the boring boy that was always too goody. Like, I would behave myself more. And when I would sin, which I sinned plenty because all boys do, I think all women do, but that's not my experience. So all boys sin. It was not something that was obvious. It was not something that was, oh my goodness, he did so much. It was just average, everyday, ordinary, defying God moments. And so I repented plenty. I think I've shared with you before that I've been saved about a million times because I went through this phase when I was in high school where every time I sinned, I thought God left me. And I would pray for him to forgive my sins, and then just in case, I'd ask him to come into my heart all fresh all over again, just in case, because I wanted to hedge my bets. So I was saved every night for years when I was laying in bed thinking about all the bad things I did that day. But we've grown. And then just like there's those moments that I remember with my life with Donna, there's these moments I remember with my life with God that stick out to me as being really important, critical times. And I wrote a few of them down. I remember one day I decided I was going to study the Bible. And I must have been like in junior high. But I was determined that I was going to be a Bible studier like never before. And my grandma had given me a Bible. And I took it out and I got a ruler, my mom's ruler, and I got a pen. And I sat down and I read with every bit of focus a grade 7 student could give. And I would underline things. And I started in Revelation because that's the fun book. And then I finished. I made it all the way through Revelation. Looking back now, I still have the Bible. Almost everything is underlined. Because I was so like determined that I was going to wring meaning out of every word. And I started backing up then. So I went to Jude, and it was cool because there's something about archangels fighting over a dead body. And then I went back to John. I'm like, oh, this is just okay. There's bad people there. And then 1 John, I'm like, oh, I was just talking about there wasn't so much to underline. But then I hit Peter, and there was all this apocalyptic stuff, which was cool. And then somewhere in Paul's letters, I got bored, and I trailed off. And I have a Bible that's almost a third of the New Testament is underlined in it because I was determined. And I think God kind of really confirmed where he wanted me in life in that moment. It was kind of cool. I remember in Bible college, I went through this phase where I decided I was going to be holy. Not just let God clean me holy, but make myself holy as I could be. And I had a weakness for U2 and secondhand music stores. I had a phenomenal CD collection. At one point, I think my mom, when I was in high school, thought I was on drugs because she couldn't figure out where all my money went. It was all CDs. Anyways, there was this moment where I felt God speak to me in chapel, and I went to my room. If you could believe this about me, I got all my evil CDs, my U2 CDs and stuff like that, and I threw them in the garbage. And my roommate was furious with me. Scott Kelly, this is my first year of Bible college. You do crazy things when you're first year of Bible college. Tamara, I think, is on her way there. She'll know. But you do these crazy things, right? And my roommate, he didn't tell me this. I found out later. He fished some of his favorites out of the garbage and kept them. He's like, give them to me. Nope, they have to be thrown out. No, give them to me. No. Anyway, he snuck them. And I look back at that. I think it's pretty... When I started to look back, I thought, you know what, that's embarrassing. How could I have done something like that? So silly, but that's what God was telling me then, and I obeyed, and it was an important step in my life. I've since recovered everything I've thrown out, but I don't think that was the point. I can read scriptures. We can discuss that another time. It was just one of those moments where I made a commitment. I've had moments of struggle in my relationship with God too, times when I've been frustrated and not sure what to do. I remember the first time I ever gave a message in tongues. I was in the Bible College chapel. There's about 500 students at Bible College when I was there. And so it was fiery. It was going. The service was moving. It felt like the right time. There was just the right amount of quiet after the worship leader stopped the song where it's like something's going to happen or the next song's going to start. And I'm like, all right, I can do this. Bah! And I stepped up and I gave this huge, loud, echoing through the church message in tongues. I don't know if it was Holy Spirit inspired or pizza inspired or what, but I gave it with all my heart. And then everyone went silent because back then you don't even do background music, right? Everyone would stop playing and you just wait. It's like, wait, wait, wait for it, wait for it. And it's just like, you tell when I told Dawn I loved her and it felt like, oh, is she going to say it back? I gave this message in tongues and I'm like, is anyone going to interpret this? Am I left here hanging? And there was an awkward silence for about a minute and a half, and then the worship leader started playing the next song and everyone went on, and I was crushed. I'm like, God, how could you do that to me? Always blaming God, because that's what we do, right? Even though it was probably just my own vain sort of wanting to be spiritual and doing what I could. But we grew from that. I remember there was a revival going on in the church in London. at the time, London, Ontario. And the pastor there that was pastoring it came to speak at our school. And crazy things would happen in that church. People were falling down and they were rolling over. And there was lots of jokes around Bible college about who you fall down beside and get to roll over. But because we're students, right? But I was wrestling with God at the same time and thinking, God, I want to be spiritual. I don't want to just be... I always felt like I needed to be more spiritual than I really was. Not like spiritual in the outward appearance. And so this guy was coming. I'm like, God, I want you to tell me if this stuff is real or if I'm just making it up or if we're all mass hypnotized or what. And they had an altar call and I went right up to the front and I was there and I did what you're supposed to do. I had my hands in the air above my head, my eyes closed, my head tilted back. So if God wanted to knock me over, he wouldn't have to push very hard, right? I was ready to go. I was standing there and the minister came along and all he did was touch my shoulder. He didn't even do the head thing. He just touched my shoulder and kept going and I stayed up. I'm like, God, that was your moment. I was when you were... I've since learned that you cannot manipulate God. You can't tell him what to do when because he doesn't obey us all the time. Thank goodness. But we grew because of that. And there's been time and time in my life where my relationship with God is... there's been a point of frustration or tension, and then God has taught me through it, and we've gone on through it. And I've been... with God, this is our 34th year together in my relationship with God. And we've grown a lot. Here's why I told you those stories. I planned on teaching a sermon that was really nice and neat this morning. It was called Holy Habits. And if you read your bulletin, you'll see that there's a title called Holy Habits or Spiritual Disciplines. Because we all like to make some sort of determination in our heart, even if we don't call it a resolution, to be better Christians in the year to come. And I was going to talk, this is the second most influential book in my life, Richard Foster's, I grabbed the wrong one, Richard Foster's Celebration of Discipline, and he talks about prayer and fasting and Bible study and meditation and solitude and silence and celebration and confession and all these wonderful things, and I was going to teach a sermon on it about all the things we can do, and then... And if you look in your bulletin that I've handed out, I have put a thing in there on meditation. I'm going to continue every month. If you feel like you want to grow in spiritual disciplines, there's ideas there for you for how you can meditate on God's Word. Next month, I think it'll be how you can study God's Word and how what does it mean to fast. We're going to be looking at these a little bit. But I was preparing to preach a message on it. And there was a night last week where I was reading... back to my Calvin Miller book. And it was late at night, and I was reading Calvin Miller. And he said this: if I had to do it over again, I would reverse my prayer life. I wouldn't talk to him so much. I would listen more. I still wonder, after a lifetime of chatty prayers, if I had not been so noisy in his presence, would he have told me more from his giant heart? If I had to do it all over again, if I could, I would reverse my prayer life. I wouldn't talk to him so much, I would listen more. I wonder, after a lifetime of chatty prayers, if I had not been so noisy in his presence, would he have told me more from his giant heart? And that line just pierced my heart. And that night last week, kids were sleeping, Donna was sleeping. By the light of the Christmas tree, I was on my knees in the ottoman in the living room, and I just said, Lord, speak to me. This is for me right now. Speak to me. And the text that I shared at the beginning of the message, do you love me? It just kind of rang in my heart, like really loud. You know those times, I've never really heard an audible voice of God, but you know those times when you know he's speaking to you and there's no question? It was one of those moments this past week, and I just felt him say, do you love me? And I was thinking, I'm doing a whole sermon on spiritual disciplines. I love praying. I love reading the Bible. I don't love fasting, but I'm going to try. I love these things, right? I love the things of God. I love leading worship. I love singing in church. I love praying with the church. I love our Wednesday prayer meetings. I love all these things we do. And God's voice still was just there. Do you love me? And it just cut to my heart. And that's what I wanted to share this morning. That's why I told you those two stories about my life with Donna, my life with God. Do you love God? I know many of us love the church, but do we love God? So I responded to that question. In the Gospels, Jesus asked this guy if he believes. And the man says, "I believe. Help my unbelief." Which I thought was a brilliant way of saying it. Yeah, I believe. Help my unbelief. Help the part of me that doesn't believe. So my response to God was, "Of course I love you. Help me love you more. Help me in those areas where I don't love you. Help me in those areas where I think I've got it figured out myself. Help me through those times where I get so enraptured with doing your things that I forget to love you." When I was on the phone with Donna, when we were dating, I wanted to be with her. It wasn't that I wanted to be on the phone. It wasn't that I wanted to talk. It wasn't that I wanted to find out about things. It was that I wanted her. And it's the same with God. Do we want the things of God or do we want God? Do we love the things associated with church? Do we love the lives he's given us? We should. There's value in that. But at the heart of it, how much do you love God? How much has his love captured your heart? So, I don't know if I've shared this with you. I think I may have. Last year, around the season of Lent, when I was trying to memorize Psalm 51, there was a line there, and it was, "Let the bones that you have broken rejoice." And it came alive in my heart, and for the whole year, every moment I've been praying in here, it's always come back to my mind, and I've been praying, "Let the bones that you have broken rejoice." This year, I think, I feel that my prayer almost through the whole year, as far as I know now, is going to be, "Help me love you more. God, help me love you more." It's one thing to love the things of God, but we need to get right down to it. Jesus asked Simon Peter, "Simon, do you love me more than these?" Do we love God more than the things we do? Do we love him more?